My Dear Fiona by Frances Rosenfeld. Chapter 11, East Over Water I Fared. You spend enough time in a place and you get the mistaken sense you understand it. It's the superficial familiarity born of living in close quarters with strangers. If you get to know it, it's not because of the hidden places you find to satisfy your curiosity, it is because the spirit of the place decided to trust you enough to reveal itself to you. You know precisely when that moment comes, and from that day forward you are no longer a stranger, you are kin. What was it about Kirkwall that broke down my walls so I could see it as more than a picturesque collection of old buildings and streets and feel the warmth of life inside its stone walls, very looper that I am? It's like I've lived here for 1,000 years, and I'm not sure that feeling is mine, Fiona. I'm not sure at all. You'd probably been long gone by the time they placed the foundations of this place, but your spirit is alive everywhere, on the seawall battered by the wind and the waves, in the austere reverence of St. Magnus Cathedral, in the ancient souterrains that surprise you in the middle of the city, cozily at home in people's backyards. History is recorded in writing, but a place's traditions live in images. The lives and beliefs of the people speak to us directly from them, and even in the face of centuries, their visual messages and symbols bear the handprints and the emotions of the artists who carved them. They weren't strangers, those three warriors on the Pictish stone in Bearsey, to the one who carved their likeness. There is no way of knowing whether they were still alive when the stone was cut, but they had actual histories and lives and people who loved them. They're not strangers to me either, and they're looking back at me through the window of their historical artifact, like they are curious to find out how things turned out. I closed my eyes to rest them and compose myself after poring over so many pictures of the crescent and V-rod symbol, which seems to be everywhere, and the various explanations about its purpose or meaning, and in the world behind my eyelids I saw you, Fiona, holding a polished obsidian stone where the broken arrow shoots back up, like a protective barrier. After that you started tying elaborate knots, so complicated I couldn't follow the threads from beginning to end, and there were so many of them, stretched out in patterns and grids, endlessly interconnected as far as the eye can see. They're supposed to symbolize people's lives, those threads, under old pagan laws. That's what we are, nodes in the fabric of our communities, bound to so many others in inextricable ways. It's not the nodes that count, but the bundles of threads that pass through them, which belong to several other nodes as well. We're the sum of all these threads we extend into other people's lives, and our spirit lives on through them after we die. I was so engrossed in my mental imagery of lives knotted together the knock on the door sounded like thunder, and I jumped out of my chair, disoriented. "You have a parcel, miss," the landlady announced. "From America." I thanked her and took the box to the table, sure my mother had sent me a care package, only to note, bewildered, that it was addressed to Fiona Coracle, in a handwriting I didn't recognize and with no return address. I tried to tell the host it must be a mistake, but she shrugged and said there's no other American living in the building, and asked me if I knew Fiona and maybe someone back home thought I could deliver the package to her. I stopped short of telling her Fiona Coracle probably died somewhere between 900 and 1100 years ago. I figured the package was probably a prank from one of my colleagues at the Institute, who used to tease me I'd fallen for a dead woman. He laughed at me for writing myself into a story even the most inspired ancient bard, heart on fire for unrequited love, would have found too far-fetched to spin. Obsidian mirror or not. But they have never seen Jerun, my young princess, nor have they watched her walk from stone to stone at Stennis, chanting in your ancient language. What do they know about bards and Old Norse poetry? That's what I came here to research. West over water I fared, bearing poetry's waves to the shore of the war god's heart. My course was set. I launched my oaken craft at the breaking of ice, loaded my cargo of praise aboard my longboat aft. I looked at the parcel, unsure whether I should open it. It was obviously for me, addressee notwithstanding. I wondered what could be inside and pictured all sorts of mysterious objects, from stone tablets covered in obscure inscriptions to old mirrors, and from combs made of bone to rudimentary writing implements. The package loomed large from the top of the counter. "I carry Odin's mead to England's meadows." I figured whoever pulled the prank must have been quite imaginative regarding the parcel's contents, and curiosity got the better of me, only to be deflated by the sight of Mom's Linzer cookies and a picture of my sister grinning from ear to ear. They accompanied the book I asked the family to send, the one I forgot to bring with me, and a short handwritten note informing me my sister already made arrangements for travel so she could meet me here for the June festival. I called home to confirm the package arrived and chew up whoever thought it was a good idea to send it to Fiona. I figured you two must spend a lot of time together now, my sister laughed. I asked Dad to write the address, so you wouldn't know who it was from. I wish I were there to see your face. How are you doing with your studies? I regaled her with a thorough account of my current research, which, for some reason, always has the effect of putting my family off asking additional questions. She didn't relent. Nice try, sis. Did you find her? No, I answered. What makes you think I will? She called out to you, didn't she? My sister replied. It stands to reason. So, I asked encouraged, you don't think I'm crazy? Oh, you're completely bonkers, no doubt about that, but I know it will make you happy. She paused. I'm jealous. I feel like I'm sharing my sister with a whole other family of dead people. Just don't tell Dad, okay? I'm on thin ice with him as it is. Are you kidding? He told the entire city of Eau Claire his daughter is working on her doctoral thesis on the Viking migration to the British Isles. The other daughter, chopped liver. I'm sure that's not true. One hopes. Hey, should I bring anything when I come over? Nothing but yourself and my ukulele. Hey, sis. What? Ah, you were going to laugh. Tell me. I had a dream about you. You were in a circle of stones with this tall Norse woman, a warrior. Jerun, I thought, but said nothing. She said she was a poet. That's not possible, right? A woman poet in the Viking Age? Actually, I started explaining. Sorry, gotta go. Chad is here. We're late for the concert. Bye, she hung up abruptly, in a move with which I had become so well acquainted growing up together. I could see Jerun's smile in my mind's eye, gratified to be acknowledged, and to confirm the blood running through our family tree, Fiona's blood, the seer blood, did not skip that branch. I munched on my Linzer cookies, comforted by the taste of home, and then closed off the books and the papers and went out into the city, to feel its heartbeat. You don't go to a place to find out things people already know. You go to a place to find its soul. I suddenly realized I never asked myself what in the world I was doing here, alone. We always find reasons after the fact, rational explanations, reversions to the normal, to put the minds of the people who love us and worry about us at ease about the irrational decisions our souls make. We don't question our destiny. It's a yearning as natural as breathing. Thousands of miles away from my family, in a city I barely knew, surrounded by the ancient artifacts of a culture with which I only had a connection from books and dreams, I felt like I finally arrived home.